My name is Ann Smith, and I am a volunteer with the Sam Proctor Program at the University of Florida. And today's date is April 26th, 2011, and I am in the home of Robert McIntosh, who says I can call him Mac. Is that right? Okay. And first of all, tell me your full name.
Robert Patrick McIntosh.
And you better tell me about McIntosh and the correct spelling, since we've already...
It's M-C, capital I-N-T-O-S-H.
Okay. And where were you born?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin,
1920. What month?
September 24th.
Uh-huh. I didn't think that sounded like a Southern accent.
No, it certainly is.
It sounds like
we're Middle Westerners.
Yeah, so am I. We're all transplants.
Where are you from?
Well, mostly Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
That's where most of my family was from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were born, were you the firstborn in your family?
No, I was, the third of three.
Uh-huh. And did you have sisters and brothers?
I had a brother and a sister.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And what do you remember from your early life and your childhood and family life?
Well, I was very fortunate. I had a good situation, you know, pretty a good family situation, although at one point my father left home. My parents never divorced, but he just left, and I saw him on occasion, but he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a good relation, particularly with my brother, who was sort of athletic, and he took me around with a lot of things. My sister and I were sort of distant, but we got along all right.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and I were really, very close.
What difference in age was there between you and your brother?
Probably about 4 or 5 years,
uh-huh.
I'd say.
Uh-huh. And now, what did your father do for a living?
He was a railroad... He started out as a band player, but he played the clarinet, I guess it was. But he couldn't make a living at it.
Uh-huh.
So he went railroading.
I see.
And became a railroad engineer, and that's what he did the rest of his life,
uh-huh,
until he retired.
Uh-huh. Now, was he the major wage earner, or did your mother work outside the home?
Well, she didn't until the war.
Uh-huh.
And then she worked outside and in the, pretty much till she retired.
What did she do?
She worked, what the heck was it, in a nearby factory, and I'm not quite sure, it changed its function, and just exactly what she did, I'm not clear anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she walked to work to this factory that was not too far from our house.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Could I interrupt?
You sure.
Remember? Uh-huh. Then she worked the rest of her life till she retired.
Mm-hmm.
So she was, very, by her standards, or by our standards, she was very well off.
Mm-hmm.
She left us all, three of us, little bits of money.
And, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she liked her work. Or she had worked as a young woman, before she was married. She worked all her life, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, but you remember growing up in a happy, cohesive situation?
Well, it wasn't entirely cohesive because at one point my father left the house,
mm-hmm,
and I saw him on occasion. He lived not far away and all.
Uh-huh.
But they were separated,
uh-huh,
for the rest of their lives.
Sure, sure. When you were old enough to go to school, did you like school?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed school very well. I went to a good grade school within a few blocks of,
mm-hmm,
walking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what, the Frotney Street School, and I had to go across the railroad track and pass the sausage plant. Milwaukee was an industrial city.
Sure.
So I had all these things
to pass
between me. If I went one way, I went by a sausage factory. If I went the other street, I went by a steel plant.
Isn't
to get
that
to
right?
school.
Yeah.
So you were, it was a very industrial place. But anyway, I enjoyed the school. It was, I think, a quite good school, quite well run. And I have no complaints. And I went to high school there, Eastside High School in Milwaukee, and played football. I had a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
Had
mm-hmm.
very good teachers and very good athletic coaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was very fine.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you graduated from high school, then what did you do?
From high school, I went to college.
Uh-huh.
Primarily because my high school football coach, how'd that work? Yeah, went and took a job at Lawrence College. And so he took numbers of us with him to play football.
Uh-huh. And what year was that you started college?
Oh, God.
Or graduated from high school?
I'd have been about 16, so it'd be about 1936 or 7.
Uh-huh. I thought it was 38.
38?
Yeah, okay. I graduated from college in 42.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 38, let's say.
Yeah.
All right, and graduated from college in 42.
42, yeah.
What was your major?
Biology, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you do after after you graduated?
Let's see. I think I graduated in 42 and I went right into the Army.
Were you drafted?
Let's see, was I drafted? No, I think I enlisted.
Uh-huh.
I think so, yeah.
And that was in Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah.
In Milwaukee, uh-huh. And so when you entered, you were sent to boot camp first?
I enlisted on the 15th of June and left for overseas on the 5th of July.
Really?
And by August, I was in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, Northern Australia, too, just south of Darwin, listening to the bombs dropping. So
and feeling somewhat unprepared?
Well, definitely unprepared. I was not trained at all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had no formal training up
no.
to that time.
No.
And I did sort of routine guard duty and things like that.
Uh-huh. So I was going to ask you what your job was.
Well, I was the major job. I was in the military police company.
Uh-huh.
And so we did guard duty.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes, let's see, of places, other times of the, we guarded prison camps for Americans. And at one point, after I was commissioned, I established and built three big barbed wire enclosures for Japanese prisoners.
Is that right? And this is in Northern mm-hmm. Australia?
It was on an island off Australia.
I see.
And we never got a single prisoner.
Oh, really?
Not one. Eventually just tore those things down. But they weren't taking any prisoners.
Yeah.
That era, we just were sort of, we worked on the building the prison enclosures.
Uh-huh.
But luckily, the main problem was digging. You had to set up poles every 10 yards.
Yeah.
And we had to cut palm trees.
Uh-huh.
Cut them into pole lengths and set them in. And the worst problem was digging holes. But at one point, a company came along, which had a big postal digger. So they dug all the post holes for us. Otherwise, we'd have been digging post holes by hand for months.
Oh, forever.
Because they were very hard to dig in that soil.
Yes.
And so that saved our lives. And so we got the enclosures up fairly readily, but we never got a single prisoner.
Now, when you first started and you said you were guarding American prisoners?
Yeah.
Now, what were the circumstances for that?
Well, some of them were, the bulk of them were deserters.
Oh, I see. I see. So they had put them in the stockade for...
Oh, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, they were eventually sent back to the States.
I see. I see.
I don't know, just what their fate was.
Nick, did you mention Officers Candidate School?
Not yet. At one point, I went to Officers Candidate School in Brisbane, and so I was there about 3 months, and then I was commissioned.
And did you enjoy the education part of that?
Yeah, the camp was pleasant and interesting, and the teaching was good, but the teachers, the whole cadre for the teaching group was fresh from the United States. Most of the students had been in New Guinea and other places, but mostly New Guinea, fighting.
Oh, really?
For some long time. And so one of the commonest things was the officers teaching would say this and this and this, and these guys who'd been fighting say, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It was really very remarkable.
Well, it was, I bet that really enhanced everybody's education to know the real story.
Well, I hope it did, but some of those guys were not too correctable, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
They had been sort of indoctrinated.
Yeah.
And I think they didn't take kindly to being told that they were wrong.
Right, right. So then you were a commissioned officer, is that right?
Then I got a commission.
What was your commission?
Well, I was commissioned as a second lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
And then later was promoted to a first lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
And when I left the Army, I was promoted to captain. That took a while.
So you left as a captain?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So when you got out of officer training, did your assignment change?
Well, my function changed. I was assigned to establish these POW camps.
I see.
And we worked building the stockades.
Yeah.
But we never got any prisoners.
Yeah.
So we had a very nice camp area set up, isolated from the main camp.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was a huge, military establishment. But we were a couple of miles away, isolated, so that we could keep these prisoners that we never got.
Yeah.
And so we set up a very nice little area of tents and a big place in the middle and set up a volleyball court. We had good times.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Did you make some good friends when you were at time?
Yeah, I've not kept up with any of them appreciably, but I had good relations in the staff and then at times, one point for a long months, I was on a sort of a detached job with the 7 non-commissioned officers.
Uh-huh.
And I got to be quite close to them.
Uh-huh.
Had a good time, and there was no rank problem there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I was fairly fortunate in my military experience, except for some bombing activity when we were up near Darwin at one point.
Uh-huh.
And we got a lot of bomb activity there, but we never encountered direct Japanese troops. At the time we were in Darwin, they were on an island about 100 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a lot of bombing.
Yes.
But no actual presence of Japanese troops.
I see.
The only Japanese troops I ever saw were prisoners.
And so, did you spend the majority of your time then in Australia?
No, I was in about a year in Australia. About 2 years in New Guinea.
In New Guinea?
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
Well, that's just the outfit I was in was sent to New Guinea. I was in a company. There was a battalion. There was four companies, I think. The one company that I happened to be in was sent to New Guinea. And we set up POW camps, but never got any prisoners. And then did some standard guard duties on, worked on boats and things like that. Guarding boat areas.
And did you have any experiences that stand out for you?
Not really. I was never in any active, in the bombings and so on, but in terms of immediate direct association with combat troops of Japanese or others, I was never that close. Later on, we moved to the Philippines. And you could sit there and hear the shooting. But I was not close and being shot at.
Right. Did you have associates and friends who were?
Not many. Most of my immediate friends were more or less like myself.
We're in the same
police or other outfits, and so I had very little association with the infantry combat people.
Right. And so, was there scuttlebutt and news coming all the time from how the war was going, or were you pretty much isolated?
We were isolated. We had almost no information about what was going on. Anywhere distant from our immediate location, we didn't know. The communication available, stuff about Europe and so on was nil. And even about areas in the Asiatic theater, we didn't get much information.
When was the first whisper that you heard anything about either the bombing in Japan or the end of the war? Did you?
Trying to remember exactly. We were. My recollections are hazy, but we were not far from, Japan at that point, and so we heard about the bombings, and then when we I landed at one point in Tokyo, it was right near Tokyo. So at one point I went into Tokyo, and it was as far as you could see. There wasn't a standing building.
Really?
It was just right down the center of town. At one point I had to go in, and they had a train running still into Tokyo. This was after the surrender. After the surrender. And you could go 20, 30 miles without seeing a building. And then right down in the center of the city, you could see the building, a few buildings.
Could I interrupt a minute?
Yeah. We came in on a ship, and we're right next
to the Missouri.
Missouri, where MacArthur was signing the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we heard his statements on the radio. We were right next to it, actually.
Really?
It was a sort of a statement to the American public that we're going to send them home now and take care of them kind of thing.
Yeah.
So But they didn't send us right away home.
Yeah.
Rose told me about how the emperor told the Japanese that the war was over and no more shooting.
Oh, yeah, that was remarkable. The emperor was quoted on radio that the Japanese had lost the war and they were giving up. And that was the amazing thing. I was in the military police. We were covering all this stuff. We never had a single incident of a Japanese attacking an American soldier. Not one. And it was really remarkable when you think, you know, what they'd been through.
Yeah.
And all the bombings and the devastating things. And some of the Americans didn't behave all that well at that.
Yeah.
But there was no incident of a Japanese attacking an American soldier in our area. And I didn't hear of any at all.
You're talking about if they were a prisoner of war?
No, just civilians or other.
Uh-huh.
They weren't. A lot of the army was just out. They weren't prisoners.
I see.
And they were just effectively discharged.
Uh-huh.
And there were no attacks on America. That was really amazing to me.
Yeah.
Did you tell what you became then, a provost marshal? In Japan, you were assigned to...
Oh, yeah. Well, at one point, I was made a provost marshal of the area.
Now, what is that?
Well, you're essentially a head police officer.
Is it P-R-O-V-O?
Yeah, P-R-O-V-O-S-T, I think it is.
Okay.
Provost Marshal. Provost. And it's basically, you're the police officer, the head police officer. And at one point, I had 20 geisha houses in my area.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing business like mad.
I bet.
So we had to sort of please. There weren't any particular problems. They were remarkably well controlled. And the geishas were quite well behaved, no problems with them.
Uh-huh.
And by and large, the Japanese civilians at the end of the war were quite remarkable. There was no, in our area, and I had never heard of any incidents of an attack on an American soldier by a Japanese after the war.
They were probably pretty glad it was over.
They were, I'm sure, glad it was over. And the reaction, you know, of people as you encountered them, even of Japanese troops who were often assigned to work for you, was good. You never had any problems. I was amazed at that.
Yeah, you wouldn't have expected that.
No, I would have thought there'd be at least some individuals out there doing what they do to
get back,
get revenge.
Revenge, sure.
This is what they gave you, this which is broken, but and several other things when he left as provost marshal to go home after a number of months.
Oh, gifts and...
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Tell about your trip on the train that one day to Tokyo and the man coming toward you.
At one point I had to take a train that was running going into Tokyo. And I got on the train and... it was full of Japanese, but the conductor, since I was a military officer, got me a seat.
Oh, I see.
And so I was seated. And all of a sudden, I noticed this guy pushing his way towards me. And he kept coming and coming. I had a gun in my hand. And I was the only American on the car. And finally, he came up. And he whipped out a book and papers. He wanted me to help him translate.
Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah. So I helped him translate a little bit on the way to Tokyo.
To Tokyo. Well, now, were you stationed somewhere in Japan?
Oh, yeah.
Where about were you outside of Tokyo?
Well, yeah, I was in a place called Tateyama.
Can you spell that?
T-A-T-E-A-M-A.
Okay.
Tateyama.
Okay.
And it was very nice, actually. It was at the end, let's see, how did that work? You took the train out of Tokyo and essentially went to the end of the line.
I see.
And it was a long sort of peninsula.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of that peninsula was this town of Tateyama. And so I was provost marshal of that town. I had a company of military police with me. And it was remarkable. We had no problems with civilians or the Japanese troops were working for us.
Uh-huh.
And never any problems, no incidents. It was really, you know, quite amazing that, you know, here they've been
yes.
at war and
sure.
all the animus. And the when the emperor was very explicit, you know, I can't remember the words, but he said the war is over, quit, and they all quit, and we ended up with cadres of Japanese troops doing work for us. And it was really remarkable that there were no, and I would have heard of any attacks or
yes.
incidents
yeah.
of Japanese
right.
either civilians or troops attacking.
Yes.
Never one in our area. So it was an amazing end to the war.
It's kind of a striking commentary on the difference of the cultures.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I would very much doubt that in America
that would happen.
That would have happened, yeah.
Yeah. So, now, was your discharge sometime after the time, or were you in Tokyo or around?
Well, I was
in
Tokyo for some time, a few months really, and then I was shipped home, and I can remember sailing out of Tokyo Harbor with Fujiyama, right there. It was really pretty exciting,
yes.
very striking.
I bet.
Mountain. And then sailed home and landed briefly on the west coast and then took a train back to Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
So that was good.
And your mother was pretty glad to see you?
Oh, yeah. I think they were. Yeah.
Tell about arriving late at night and your brother answered the door. Or early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I arrived at night. My mother was sleeping up in the attic in our house.
Uh-huh.
And in the morning, what did he do?
Well, the two of you talked, and he was so glad to see you. He had just gotten
yeah,
back from
work. My brother had gotten home a few days before
oh,
me.
Oh, really?
So we were, yeah, spent up.
And then very night. Early in the morning, you awakened yeah. your mother.
Yeah. And we said to my mother, she was sleeping up in the attic.
Uh-huh.
And we said to my brother, we want you to come down here and give him breakfast. And she caught on to the we.
Oh, and she rushed down.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that was really dramatic.
Was your brother in the army too?
Oh, yeah. He had just gotten home shortly before me.
And where was he? Was he stationed?
He was in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the Pacific.
And what was his experience in the war?
Oh, God, I can hardly remember.
He turned ill at one point.
What?
He became ill at one point.
Yeah, that's true. He had been quite seriously ill. But I don't remember any
uh-huh.
details. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
But,
And he was 10 years older than you, or 8?
7, I think.
Seven years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is he still alive?
No, Andy died how long ago?
He died at age 96.
Yeah, he was 96.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He died.
About 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 2 or 3 years
ago. Uh-huh.
So you were discharged when you... Were you discharged in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And after you were discharged, what did you do? You had already graduated from college, is that right?
Yeah. I worked a little bit, but then I went to graduate school. Which
well, first of all, you taught for a little while at the school in Milwaukee, at the University Extension.
Oh, that's right, I did. I taught at the university branch, University of Wisconsin branch.
And what did you teach?
Biology.
Uh-huh.
And then I went from there to Madison, to the university, and took a degree.
And what was
I met Joan.
And what was your degree in?
Biology. Ecology, specifically.
Ecology, uh-huh. And that was what year that you went to graduate school, do you remember?
46.
46.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because we met in 46. We got married in 47.
How did you know she was the one? Now, I don't want her to answer that one. I want to know, how did you know Joan was the one?
Oh, she attacked me.
Oh.
Oh, man.
So you were helpless. Here's the military police.
Yes, I want to hear this.
Yeah, this is going to be worthy of another poem.
We
met and got along very well, and so... After a fairly short time, we surprised all our families, didn't we?
Well, I always remember the story that I called my folks up on the, and right then they were having a telephone strike all around the state, maybe around the country, and they said we only have emergency calls. And I started to cry and said, but I have to tell my mother and daddy that I'm getting married. And they put me right through.
That's an emergency.
Next day they were out there because they hadn't even met Meg.
Yeah, that's true.
And then my father was very organized.
He came out. I remember we were in a little restaurant somewhere. He got his pencil and he said, what's your name? I was absolutely new to him.
Well, now, where was Joan from? Was Madison your home?
No, I was from Milwaukee, too.
Oh, good.
She was from a fancy suburb of Milwaukee.
Oh.
Whitefish Bay.
Commonly known to Mac and his friends as Rich Bay.
Yeah.
So you married up, is that right?
Oh, definitely. She thinks I married her for her money, but she didn't have enough.
And just think of all the other offers you got.
Oh, God, yes.
So you finished graduate school, and your degree was what?
In ecology. Yeah.
Yes, a doctorate.
And so you were planning to go into teaching, or did you want to go into...
No, I went into teaching directly. I took a job. First, was it at Vassar? No,
first
Middlebury.
First was Middlebury.
Middlebury College first.
3 years.
For 3 years, and we moved to Vassar College for what?
Five years.
Uh-huh.
And then
Notre Dame
for the rest of my career.
Uh-huh. 2 years.
That was a good move.
Well, tell me about Notre Dame. How did that come about? They heard you were wonderful and recruited you?
I don't know.
Well, you applied there. And they
I guess I just heard there was a job there. And I applied, and I had, of course, good recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Although at the second place we were at, I had very bad relationships with the chairman.
Uh-huh.
And I knew she wouldn't write me a decent recommendation. So I applied to the president of the university, who knew that this woman was a bitch. And so the president wrote me a very nice recommendation. And so that got me a job without any trouble.
What did you like about Notre Dame?
Well, Notre Dame turned out to be very good. It was all men at the time.
Was it?
Yeah. It was a good, the town was a good place to live. There were lots of activities at the university. We had good associations with our colleagues and friends there.
Yeah.
So it was a very happy, successful, and long-term.
Well, considering we aren't even Catholic.
That was an interesting experience.
Nobody ever tried to change nothing about religion at all.
Uh-huh.
They were very good in that. So.
Now, do you have a family?
We have two children.
And they were born when you were at Notre Dame?
Toby was born while we were in graduate school, 2 years later.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, that's right.
At Wisconsin, 2 years after we were married. And on the farm, we lived on a farm while we were in graduate school.
Oh, neat.
There were many men that had come back that it was very hard to find housing.
I bet.
And Mac found the upstairs of this gorgeous Wisconsin old style
farmhouse.
Perfect. Wonderful. Wonderful people.
An elderly couple who we adored.
Yeah, they were great. We were in the upstairs. We'd find dinners on the stairway on occasion.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, she was.
And she showed us she showed Mac how to kill a chicken. And she showed me how to defeather it.
We learned a lot from them.
Those of us who are city kids, you know, those farm experiences.
We were city kids, and that's where we got our farm experience.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a good experience. Very good.
Well, do you remember the time when we invited my folks after we had gotten to the
farm? Yeah.
We invited them for a fancy lunch. And so my suburban parents arrived, and I had really worked for days thinking what to serve and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the day they were castrating all the pigs. And the squeals and the
noise.
Pretty squealy.
The noise from castrated pigs.
It was a hog farm. They had 99 Duroc hogs.
Well, I went to college in Iowa, and so we know about hogs.
I can believe it.
University of Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
So you know, all the things you say about the Midwest, I can plug into very easily.
That's
great. Yeah, yeah. But I was a city kid, and so... to the University of Iowa, where, you know, people were saying, well, I wasn't from Lost Nation, Iowa. I was outside. And I thought, well, they don't even have a stop sign, much less a stop light. And so, you know, it was foreign territory.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, so you had a teaching career, and were you required to do research for your position?
Well, I did. You were basically required. It was expected of you.
Yes.
So I spent a lot of time.
But he was in it from the time of graduate school because he had a very fine professor.
Yeah.
And they cooperated.
In graduate school, I had good, particularly significant faculty member who was a major, or essentially almost an originator of plant ecology in Wisconsin.
Really?
And so I worked with him. And we wrote a joint book, wasn't it?
Well, no, the book you wrote
a joint book with several of us.
Well, that was later, though. But the first book that you wrote, the Cambridge University printed, was your own book.
Yeah.
And what was that about?
That was a history of ecology.
The history.
Essentially.
Do you have a resume or something that I could put with your file?
Let's
see what we have here. We have the book, but
I'm looking for where you keep the book.
It's down the bottom somewhere.
The book.
There's a beat up copy, and then there's a brand new copy. The other book is there too.
Just a minute.
And so,
it's down there somewhere, Joan.
Yeah, I'll find it. Oh, here it is. Here's your new copy.
You know, that's the beat up copy. Yeah. That's all right.
Yeah, here's the beat up copy because this is his own copy and it's really coming apart.
That's the one I worked
with. This was the one from, and it was put out by Cambridge University Press.
And this was the first book?
First book, and yeah. It still sells 25 years later. Not many copies anymore, but it.
So
I
this
got a
is.
Report coming in the next week, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the.
That's our daughter.
This is.
Where's our daughter?
Granddaughter.
Oh. And she has gone into ecology also.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and now was that. That was kind of a far out topic at that time, wasn't it?
It started newly emerging. Yeah, it started back in the late 1800s. But it didn't really get going. I think Wisconsin really got it going. Yeah.
That was one of the big leaders.
So this was really kind of landmark.
Yeah, it was.
So that everybody could refer to this, particularly if you're talking about the history.
Well,
and
for years, this was the only book that helped graduate students to get a background, and that's why it sold so well.
Okay, just for the record, the title of the book is The Background of Ecology, Concept and Theory by Robert P. McIntosh, University of Notre Dame. And what do we have here for publishing date was first published in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I would go ahead and put that on the
record. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel like when you're working in a field like ecology, was it an uphill battle, or did you have a lot of support, particularly in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin was an ideal place to be.
Yeah, I would think.
It was just really getting ecology started, and Wisconsin was one of the major leaders in the origin of ecology in the United States.
And it had big names there. It had people like Aldo Leopold, the wildlife ecologist. You met Aldo Leopold and you knew you were meeting a great man. There was something about him. You've probably heard of him.
Mm-hmm. I was so impressed when I came to Florida, and there are a lot of people in this community that are just so strong about saving trees and you know, the planning of Gainesville, and some of the people on the history faculty who are preservationists.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed somebody from the College of Law who co-taught with a professor in the Department of Architecture, which had never been done, but about the preservation of some of our old buildings and, you know, some of the old trees around the property and some of the preservation that's being done in St. Augustine, you know, as the oldest city in the country. So it's, I certainly think that must have been an interesting field to be as it was emerging.
It was really developing.
One of our granddaughters was just, she decided to go into Maxfield, and she applied at three big universities and accepted at all three, and she chose Wisconsin. And they said, "That's wonderful, but you're on your own. You can't ride on your grandfather's
Does the name McIntosh mean anything around here?
She'll do better than me, I'm sure.
She's awfully bright.
She's very bright.
That's wonderful. Yeah. You must be very proud.
Oh, yeah. She's very good.
Well, here, I won't get in your way, but I wanted to get some of those things in.
Yes, so I'm glad you did. Thank you. Thank you, Joan. Well, now you were at Notre Dame until you retired, is that right? Did you retire from that position?
I retired at Notre Dame.
What year was that?
Oh, God.
2002.
Good thing she's here. I don't remember most of these things.
I don't either. I have to say wait, and I'll look at my paper.
2002, and we drove down here.
How did you decide on Gainesville?
Well, we had a daughter live near here.
I see.
In what, Archer?
She lives in Archer.
I see.
So
we had a choice. Our son lives in Washington, D.C., and we couldn't afford to live there.
Bet you're right.
And we'd never see him. He's a new journalist there.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, he's got big awards.
So you've been down here since about 2002?
Yeah.
Have you liked it?
Oh, yeah, we find it fine. We have good associations. We go to the Unitarian Church, which provides us with a lot of good associations.
Yes.
And we have
the politics.
A daughter close by. And,
yes.
And then we have some grandchildren not too far away. So
that's wonderful.
It's worked out very well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And this location is very good.
I would think so. The village out here has grown so much.
Yeah.
You know, I've known it was here for just years, but since they've done all this new construction, I feel like it's a brand new place, and I have to just find my way around.
Yeah, you do. It's very, very pleasant, good, well-run operation, good food.
Yes.
So that's great.
Yeah. Well, now, I must have skipped over some important parts that you'd like in your story. Do you have things on your notes that you want me to include, or?
Well, you got the notes.
You want me to look here and see if there's something?
Yeah. This is just details of Army stuff.
Here's some of your... See, now, what I might do... Let me do this, Mac. You've got a lot of notes here about your service. How about if I do some homework, and if I have some additional questions, maybe we can double back and talk about those.
Let me see if this is relevant at all here.
All right. What have you got there?
Well, this is actually a questionnaire. I don't know if it's appropriate.
Oh, that somebody else? All right.
No, it's by a friend, really, a student, a high school student.
Uh-huh.
But he asks all sorts of questions.
All sorts of questions?
So there's a lot of information there if you find that of any interest.
Well, maybe what we'll do is wind up this portion of it, and if you and I kind of agree that there are other stories we could include,
okay,
we can maybe make another appointment. Does that sound good? All right.
Depends on your
schedule
and
needs. And so officially, before I turn off the tape, I want to thank you for
Being
part of the program.